Well, hello, my name is Jim Watkins. I want to thank you for stopping by. We're trying something new with this, and I want to see how it looks and how it sounds and how it feels, and see if we can make some real progress. You know, one of the reasons we do the podcast is because I want to introduce people to the Urantia book that may not otherwise know about it, or maybe they heard about it, or they don't know much about it, or, you know, any number of things. And what I've done is I've created a way where I can visually go over some of the key points of the book and give you real good insight as to what this book actually says. Now, I want to preface it by saying this. I'm probably the most pragmatic person in the planet. I'm not a big sucker for, you know, I remember when I was a kid, everybody was into astrology. And I was always sitting there going, how does a planet being, you know, 20 million miles away from me have any effect whatsoever on how much money I'm going to make that day? And, you know, people were really into, you know, astrology when I was growing up. And it's easy to get caught up in things that we believe in. You know, I know that many people that are Christians, you know, you have varying degrees of people who believe in certain things. And I stumbled on the Urantia book, and I wasn't particularly looking for it. I wasn't, you know, walking around in a stupor or depressed or anything like that. I was a pretty happy guy, and I had just gotten out of the Air Force, and I had my whole life ahead of me. I was 20 years old, and, you know, I was with my friends, and I was having a great time. You know, I had all the freedom in the world. I had no real obligations other than just to support myself. And I decided, you know, I could go to school or I could go learn a trade. I mean, you know, I was not an unhappy child. I felt like I had a good philosophy. I sort of believed I was a Christian, not going to church, but a Christian. I believed in God, always believed in God. And I'm telling you this because a lot of people say, oh, you know, people easily get caught up in things. Well, I've never thought of myself as being caught up in this book. I see the book for what it purports to be. And what it purports to be is a revelation, a collection of sorts, a history book, if you will, of the universe. And it starts with God and it ends with, 2,000 years after Jesus. The last paper in the book talks a lot about the continuing effects of what we can expect from the teachings of Jesus. But it's not a book that is, and I say this very carefully, it's not a book that I would recommend to somebody who is really devoutly a Christian, because you're going to spend more time, you know, dealing with the conflicts than you will appreciating what the Urantia book says. If you are a person who likes the idea of Jesus, or you like the idea of there being a creation in heaven and all these things, then this is only going to satisfy your curiosity. Okay, so let's just real quickly, I'll give you a good 5-minute tour. Okay, so the Urantia book starts off with the foreword. It's the very first chapter. In fact, there it is right there. And it starts with an introduction, which basically says why they wrote the book, right? And then they go down through the list and they talk about deity and divinity. And this first section, then the next section is about God. And then it goes further. Well, what is God? Well, he starts off being the first source and center. What are universe realities? What does that mean? Now, it sounds like, you know, real complex. But really, this foreword, this first section of the book, is sort of like a primer. And if you've ever, like, entered any kind of profession, you know that you have to kind of learn the basics of the primer before you can understand those things that follow. So the foreword is basically, nine sections that sort of give you an overview of the different ways of looking at God and the different ways that we might conceive of deity. And it's not just an old man in the sky with a long beard who sits around and takes delight at his children. It's immensely beyond that. Absolutely. So then you've got part one, which is about the central and super universe. And that explains everything that happened in the very beginnings of time. And it also explains the family, the first family of this deity. And it starts with the Trinity, and then it moves on downward until it explains not only the spiritual properties of creation, but the physical properties as well, and the dynamics of energy and what kinds of energy there is. And all this goes a long way at sort of giving you a network or a backdrop by which to continue your journey of knowledge. And then the next chapter of the book, which is part two, takes us into the local universe, which is our segment of space. Now, to give you some idea, the totality of creation today, and that means anywhere there is energy or measurement of gravity or life, in the entirety of the universe, consists of 700,000 local universes. And each local universe, that means each part of creation, that of those 700,000 universes, each one of them will contain eventually 10 million planets that will spawn intelligent life. And that's by design. That was the way the Creator set it up. That's the plan that Trinity had. And everything revolves around that life. And I'll get to, in a little while, why that's important to understand. Then you've got part three, and going back to part two, this section of the book also gives us a lot of history of how our universe came to be, and what life forms there are, what different kinds of stars there are. It explains the hierarchy of the spiritual government and who's in charge of what, and what the difference is between the suns and the offsprings of God and the offsprings of the spirit. And it goes into all these different stories about who does what and where. So you're not only learning a history of creation, you're also learning how it became to be in its present state. And we have a big part of that, actually. And that's where it gets into our specifics. So now we've gone from the central universe to the local universe. And now we go to the history of our world. And within that history, we learn about the origins of our solar system. And we learn about life establishment on our world. And we learn about the beginnings of the mammalian life and marine life. And this takes us through all the way down from the first human family to the colored races that appear, the over-control of evolution, and what is actually being accomplished by this process. And it starts to get into our early years of development, the dawn of civilization, on down through time. And now we're in paper 74 with the story about Adam and Eve and what they did and who they were and what they were accomplished. That's where I started, actually. I actually picked up paper 74. That's somebody introduced the book to me. And because we had gotten into a discussion about Adam and Eve, and he goes, well, why don't you check this out? So I read that first paper, and the next day I said, man, that book was good. I got to go get a copy of it. What was the name of it? Anyway, and so it tells us that story, and it tells us what happened after Adam and Eve defaulted, and what they defaulted, how they defaulted. And it's a little bit different of a story than the one that you read in the Bible. Then it goes down through how the kingdoms of men continue to evolve, and how evolution evolved and the marriage institution and the value that it brought to early civilization and continues to bring to modern civilization. It talks about marriage and family life. It's three distinct chapters about marriage. So you get the sense that marriage is a very important component in the affairs of human beings. Then it starts to get into more of the spiritual aspect of why religion exists and the origins of worship, and then the evolution of religion and how we embraced the ghost cults and then went on to fetishes. Sort of goes through the whole evolution of man and his social participation and his relationship with religion. And then we start getting into the teachings of Melchizedek, who played a very significant role in the evolution of religion on our world. And then we start getting into the Jewish religion and the impact it had on our world and how it carried forward some of the truths that go back hundreds of thousands of years in time. Then we start getting closer, and it goes through a whole myriad of deep spiritual conceptual where you start to learn about the soul and the spirit and the difference. It's absolutely mind-boggling. And I know a lot of people who actually started reading the Urantia book from the Thought Adjusters pages, and they said it completely changed their ideas about how they thought about their own spirit. Then it gets really interesting, and it starts talking about personality survival. So now they've told us the entire history of the planet, and they tell us about the spiritual journey, the spiritual purpose of everything. Then they start to get into, you know, where we go and what we're supposed to learn here. Also talks about how society should evolve around along certain lines until we get to that very spiritual age, the era of light and life. Then it talks about part four, the life and teachings of Jesus. And this is where the entire book takes an entirely new turn, because up to this point, we'd been learning about God, we've been learning about his universe, about our universe, about our planet, then about how we evolved and how everything sort of came to the present. And then we get to this story about this man named Jesus. And yes, it's the same Jesus in the Bible. And they go through over 700 pages of his life and where he lived and how he grew and who he's associated with. We go into learning all about his family, his mother, his father, his relatives, his neighbors, Jesus' early years, how he learns, he becomes different. He starts to become self-aware of his spiritual nature. He starts to realize the importance of his mission. And it's all sort of told in this third person's recount. And it's all based on the human experiences. The authors of this section say that they took only from the human experiences between the times of Jesus and the current day. And so over 800 pages dedicated to the Son of Man and the Son of God. So, and then it finally gets to the very end where it talks about after Pentecost. And that really addresses some of the modern concerns that we're having in our world today and the conflict between materialism and spiritualism or spirituality. And it gives us a lot of insight into how the faith and the actual teachings of Jesus will persist and the effect that they'll continue to have if we follow down that path. If we go down a different path, it'll take a lot longer to get to where we need to be as a race. And that's it. That's the Urantia book. Isn't that amazing? So you've got all these things to think about, and this is why it's a little daunting. But, you know, you start in one paper and it just leads to the next, and then you want to get to the next. And after about 3 or 4 years of reading, you start to realize, my God, this is probably one of the most important books ever to be written. Anyway, I hope that helped you understand the Urantia book. I certainly am a believer that it's a revelation. And I think it could do a lot of people good who are looking for absolutes in their life, something that gives them a sense of belonging and faith, and that all hope is not lost, and we're not just this big, big accident of the cosmos. It has changed my life for the better, and it's also brought me a lot closer to God. So with that being said, thank you again for joining me, and I hope that you'll continue to follow these video podcasts as we delve into the Urantia book.